Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our fourth quarter and 2010 year-end conference call. We are Peyto Exploration and Development Corp. With me in the room today, we've got Dave Thomas, our VP Exploration, Glenn Booth, our VP of Land, Kathy Turgeon, our CFO. Standing in for Scott Robinson, we've got our Manager of Production Operations, Todd Burdick. Scott's out in New York talking to some more of our investors. And, of course, we've got Jim Grant, our Investor Awareness Rep. Jim, why don't I turn the call to you?
Okay. For those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. So, Darren, I'd like to start with a question for you. In 2010, we accelerated our drilling activities despite a dropping price environment that had many companies scaling back their activities. In 2011, we're forecasting an even higher pace while even more companies are scaling back capital spending. Why are we bucking the trend?
Bucking the trend, that's Wild Bill's claim. You know, Jim, I think every investor out there knows the concept of buy low and sell high. And, you know, it's that same concept that drives counter-cyclical investing. And it's one that we at Peyto here have always tried to deploy. We would, I think, call ourselves opportunists and be proud of it. And as such, you know, we see this as the perfect time to build gas production, especially when everybody else is focused on oil. Natural gas, as we all know, is cyclical in nature. I mean, that's where the bumper sticker comes from that says the best cure for low natural gas prices is low natural gas prices. We know this. We're out there trying to take advantage when others aren't. And I think the reason that we can take advantage when others can't is because of our low cost structure. This year, again, we have the lowest cash costs of any producer in our industry, and we have the lowest proved producing FD&A of any industry, of any producer in our industry. So we lead in the finding and the development cost category, and we lead in the producing cost category. And, you know, it's that kind of advantage that allows us to make profits at the bottom of the commodity price cycle, which hopefully that's where we are today, and be very counter-cyclical with our investments. And, you know, it's a great advantage that very few enjoy.
Well, Darren, you talked about our low costs. What are the key performance measures you'd like to highlight when you're comparing 2010 with 2009 and previous years?
Jim, I think the key measures are, for us anyway, are the rate of return that we're generating on the capital we're investing and the growth that we're delivering on a per-share basis. You know, production per share growth this year, 28% from Q4 2009 to Q4 2010, or 40% per share from the last, you know, couple of weeks of 2009 to the last couple of weeks of 2010. So it's tremendous production growth per share. Reserves growth per share, you know, I was a little disappointed that our producing reserves per share were down slightly, but, you know, I think that's the evolution of the wells that we're drilling. We've got a pretty conservative assignment on the new horizontal wells, which I think is appropriate at this time. But, you know, I think that's going to come as we see the performance of those wells evolve. And on an undeveloped basis, you know, we were up 13% per share, which is a good reflection, I think, of the increased potential that we've got here at Peyto. And then, of course, the internal rate of return on the capital. You know, that's the thing that we're paying attention to mostly. And our IRR this year was 33% on the $261 million of capital that we invested. So those are the key metrics for us. And for the most part, those are the things that we can control. You know, the capital allocation, the production operations, the timing, the execution. You know, we can also obviously control op costs, but in reality, we're so far ahead of the pack there. I mean, our op costs could double, and we'd still be ahead of almost everyone else in the industry, which doesn't mean our op costs can go up top. We still have to keep a lid on those. But, you know, the things that we can't control, price, royalties, taxes, make it sometimes hard to improve your netbacks or, you know, get our royalties coming in the right direction. Actually, we've been pretty fortunate there, too. Our margins, both our operating margin at, you know, well over 70%, our profit margins close to 40%, those are the highest that I've seen in the industry as well. So, you know, all in all, I think those metrics are pretty amazing.
Okay. So looking just at the fourth quarter, Darren, are there any specific milestones or measures you want to highlight and why they were important to you from our last quarter?
We topped 30,000 barrels a day. I thought that was pretty good. You know, Q4 was really more of the same for us in terms of ongoing 2010 program. We were investing at a high level. In fact, you know, we invested over $100 million in that fourth quarter, which, you know, I think is evidence of the capacity of the team and the capacity of Peyto. You know, if you annualize that, that's a $400 million a year capital program. And we've commented in the past, in past conference calls, that the goal now for us, we've identified all this inventory. We've identified that we have the ability to create real returns and real per share growth for shareholders. You know, the goal for us now is to scale up, to expand our ability to invest and retain those same profitability metrics. So, you know, if Q4 is any indication that we can run that sort of $400 million a year of capital investment and do it profitably, that's pretty exciting.
Turning to our production manager, Todd Burdick, our new horizontal wells have tremendous initial production capability. When we bring them on production, what is our producing philosophy? How do we set up these wells for initial production?
Well, our philosophy has been to bring these wells on at a flow rate well below their initial deliverability in order to smooth out facility production. We do this by running bottom hole chokes that help us to both control the flow rate and reduce the flowing pressure. This allows us to get away from spending extra capital on line heaters and also reduces the amount of methanol that we need to pump. In addition, wellhead pipe erosion that would otherwise occur at those high initial rates is prevented. Also, allowing these wells to flow at a more controlled rate lessens the decline we see in the early life of the well, and that allows us to better utilize our facility capacities.
Okay, and our production rate seems to increase month after month. I understand we're approaching some limitations to the capacity of a few of our plants. What are the plans for upcoming expansions, and how much additional production room will those expansions bring on a barrel of oil equivalent a day?
Right now, we're currently under construction to increase the capacity of our Wildcat gas plant from 25 million cubic feet a day to 50 million cubic feet a day. And that equates to an additional 5,000 BOEs a day, and that should be operational by early May. We are also planning a third expansion of our Nose Hill gas plant, which will see processing capacity increase from 70 million cubic feet a day to 120 million cubic feet a day. And that equates to an additional 9,000 BOEs a day, and that will be operational by mid-July.
Turning to our VP of Exploration, Dave Thomas, we've been drilling a variety of wells from our traditional Cardium wells through other zones we worked with at verticals in the past to newer zones like the Wilrich, Notikewin, and Fowler. Can you tell us a bit about the differences between these zones and what type of opportunities we have in these zones?
In a nutshell, Jim, you could look at our opportunities this way. Previous to 2010, Peyto had been having the most success drilling vertical wells in two key zones, the Cardium and the Notikewin. The Cardium is a widespread marine short face like the sand you'd find on a vast ocean beach. And the Notikewin is a fluvial channel, or the type of sand you'd see along riverbeds. Now, what horizontal multi-stage frac technology has allowed us to do is to add a brand new widespread ocean beach sand target in the form of the Wilrich and a brand new river channel sand target in the form of the Fleur. Both of these zones are just in their earliest stages of exploitation in our area, but it's actually better than just a doubling of our best drilling target zones. The new horizontal technology is also providing us with stronger production rates in our older Cardium and Notikewin targets as well. And much of this new opportunity is occurring where we already have existing infrastructure, so we don't have to build as many new roads or build new surface drilling leases, and new pipelines, or shoot new seismic. And an additional benefit is that there's also an improved chance of hitting the sweet spots in our target reservoirs. This is especially true of the river channel targets, such as the Notikewin and Fowler, which have more natural variability than the Wilrich and Cardium beach sands.
Okay, Dave. We purchased just under 100 sections of land last year. Can you give us a little insight into what our plans are with this land? What are the target zones there, and how does it compare to our previous projects? Are there any differences?
Jim, last year we purchased land in all four of our most important play types. So specifically, we added to our Cardian, Nauticuan, Falaire, and Wilrich land inventory. Most of this land was located inside or complementary to our core areas, and some lands were purchased in brand new areas. We actually have yet to license wells on what I think are the most interesting of our new land, but we should get to those within the next 12 months or so. Also in places, we added mineral rights in order to capture target zones deeper than what we originally owned. For instance, we may have owned just the shallow Cardian mineral rights, but we purchased rights to the base of the Spirit River Group or Bullhead Group in order to pick up the Nauticuan, Falaire, Wilrich, or Cadman zones. Now, this sort of land purchase will not show up as new land on a map of our mineral rights, but it may nevertheless be quite significant. Generally speaking, though, as one of the early and most active users of horizontal multi-stage frac technology in our area of the Deep Basin, we thought we recognized a chance to capture lands that we saw value in, but where other operators might still be looking at opportunities within the framework of drilling with vertical wells. I don't recall that any of the lands we acquired in 2010 were purchased with the intent of drilling with vertical wells. All were acquired with the thought of eventually using horizontals. Now, this is a major change for us. And with our large inventory of horizontal drilling locations, we actually don't feel a lot of pressure to dramatically increase our land base, but at the same time, we recognize that this may be a golden chance to inexpensively capture some of the new opportunities which horizontal drilling is going to open up.
Okay, and Darren, back to you. Switching tracks to reserves, our year-end reserves for 2010 showed an impressive growth in volume. However, the present value of the proved producing and even the total proven did not change significantly. How would you describe the growth we achieved and the value for our capital spent?
You know, Jim, I think this year, again, we really did prove up a lot of future potential, so a lot of future locations, a lot of undeveloped resource potential that we can get after. And we saw that, obviously, in the growth in the undeveloped reserves, and we saw that in the growth in the future development capital required to develop those reserves, too. But, you know, we're still fighting a declining price, so, you know, the value of those reserves is dropping year over year. You know, if you look at proved producing, for instance, I think last year our proved producing reserves were worth about $16 a BOE at a 10% discount factor, the BOE in the ground. This year that same ratio works out to about $14 a BOE. So, you know, you're having to grow reserves at 10 to 15% just to offset the reduction in the effect of the price. That can be kind of tough. But, you know, in reality, we're selling those reserves every day when we produce them out for $25 a BOE. And our all-in, you know, find, develop, acquire cost is still lower than what those reserves are worth in the ground, which, you know, that it's surprising in a way. When you look at that metric, when you look at the proved producing FD&A cost, so the cost to get that reserves, those reserves on production, and compare that to what they're worth as a value in the ground, we're one of the very few companies that's actually doing it for less than what they're worth in the ground. You look at most other companies, and their proved producing FD&A is higher than the value of those reserves in the ground, those developed reserves in the ground, which I'm not sure how you make a profit when that's the case.
Right. And turning to Glenn Booth, our VP of Land. Glenn, in 2010, we increased our investment in land over 2009 by about 200%, and most of that in the fourth quarter. How would you describe our current land position?
Well, Jim, I'd simply describe it as growing rapidly, but not at all cost. You know, it's no secret that over the years, our land base has grown kind of from a combination of land acquisition through sales and deals, and not really participating much in asset acquisitions or corporate acquisitions. So I had mentioned last spring we felt there was an opportunity where we identified a number of lands and rights in our core area, good accessibility, closer infrastructure, and still rather close to our active horizontal drilling program, that we could probably post about 150 sections during the course of last year. And we did that. And went to the sale, and we were most fortunate, maybe given timing, low gas prices like Darren's talked about, where people were distracted and went to oil regions or oil areas, that we managed to get in there and acquire this 100 sections, 63,000 net acres at an average price of about $200 an acre. And I would suggest that in the Deep Basin, in any year, whether you go back 3 years or 5 years, accumulating that much acreage at that price is definitely opportunistic. Even as recent as yesterday, we went to the sale, and in the same region, we saw a lot of these lands go for 2, 3, 5, and sometimes 10 times as much. So accumulating that acreage when we did was very opportunistic. And like Dave's alluded to, we've got these multi-zone prospects that we've got the next 5 years or more to bring up through the drilling schedule and on production.
Well, following up on that, Glenn, Peyto doesn't carry nearly as much undeveloped land as other companies our size, even with these 100 sections. Why don't we carry more? Isn't it proportional to the number of undeveloped opportunities?
Well, you'd think so, and there's a bit of a misnomer in there, but again, what I would suggest is that we're a company that's very opportunity-driven, and I think in a way of speaking, you've heard it before, but we eat what we kill. You can have all this acreage on the sidelines and it looks great, but you've got to do something with it. And I think our purpose in what we do is to really place this acreage in a plan, get it developed, get it on production, and move on to the next one. But the devil is really in the details, and Darren and I were talking about this. If you really go in and sort of dissect the 267,000 net acres or 417 sections that we've shown at the end of the year that we've accumulated, if you dissect that amongst the four Cretaceous zones that we now exploit in our core areas, that probably translates into about 500,000 net acres or about 780 sections. And this is based on technical work, whether it be geology, geophysics. So it's not just sort of using the multiplier of the different zones. This is technical support to these lands. But if you go one step further and look at the Paddock report, you'll find that they've only accredited us 83,000 net acres or 129 sections for proved developed producing and proved developed non-producing. That's 16% of our total acreage position that's been given value. So to me, it shows the multiplier of how much more value and how much more drilling we can create through the balance of the land. So it's kind of the quality-quantity issue. I'd like to think that the quality issue of our land base, even as big as it is, but it may not be as big as others, really represents a lot of opportunities.
Okay. Now, turning to Kathy Turgeon, our CFO and VP of Finance. Kathy, most of our costs on a per MCFE basis have decreased quarter over quarter and year over year in this latest report between G&A, operating, and interest costs. The drop is more than 20%. How have we managed this, particularly for the G&A and interest?
Well, Jim, this was due primarily to our increased volumes without a corresponding equivalent increase in costs. However, for G&A, we also had an increased capital overhead recovery for 2010 because of our expanded capital program of $260 million. Even though we had a one-time cost of $700,000 in Q4 2010 for the corporate conversion, our G&A on a per MCFE basis still came in lower.
Looking at our royalties, I see they have dropped year over year as well. Are they going to continue to drop?
Well, royalties per MCFE have dropped year over year, primarily due to the fact that new production is subject to a 5% initial royalty rate and then is eligible for royalty holidays that extends this 5% rate out for, you know, another few years. And on average in 2010, a qualifying horizontal well would have earned about $1.5 million in royalty holiday. Also, our pre-2009 production, which is not subject to this 5% rate, is subject to a lower rate due to the decreased gas prices. As for seeing a decrease in the future, we will see some decrease just as more of our production is subject to a 5% rate, while the pre-2009 production continues to decline and is a smaller part of the mix.
Okay. Now, on a different note, starting with our next report, we're going to be presenting our results in the new IFRS format. How is this going to affect our Q1 report and its schedule?
Well, Q1 2011 financial statements will be prepared under IFRS, and that means we have to restate all of our 2010 comparative numbers to IFRS. This will impact non-cash items only, specifically asset retirement obligation, future performance-based compensation, and depletion expense. And for a complete description on how these items are impacted, the number values associated with the change in our January 1, 2010 opening IFRS balance sheet, you can go to our MD&A that has quite a lot of information on this with numbers, and that's available either on our website or will be filed on SEDAR on March 11th.
Okay. And will this affect the schedule of the Q1 results?
No, it will not.
And turning back to you, Darren, breakup season and road bans are going to be on us real soon. Do we have any plans for continued activity during breakup this year?
Well, I love your optimism on the weather, Jim. spring is going to be on us real soon. As we alluded to in the release, we do have plans actually to continue or try to continue drilling over breakup. You know, Dave was talking about the development wells that we're drilling today and the fact that we can use a lot of our existing infrastructure even to get at some of the new lands that we've got. You know, we're drilling off of existing well site. We're doing a lot of pad drilling, trying to optimize obviously construction costs and road costs for that matter. And so this year, we're going to try and have the 6 rigs positioned on multi-well pads when breakup hits us. Of course, we're going to have to guess when that happens. As always, spring comes when nobody's expecting it. And hopefully we can drill right through. But, you know, drilling through and then completing through would be, again, another challenge because we're talking about very heavy equipment. And when it comes to fracking, you're talking about multiple pieces of very heavy equipment moving around. So, you know, if the rains are really bad and the frost comes out fast and the road bans are extreme, then obviously we're probably going to get shut down some. But our hope is to try and keep drilling through the breakup season. And the reason that we're pushing is, you know, we're starting to see some pressure on services. Frack equipment, for instance, you know, we're seeing that it's very busy out there. Frack days are being bumped by the service companies a bit. You know, it's tough picking up rigs on windows because what rigs can operate are operating or, you know, there's other iron there, but there's no manpower to run it. So we're kind of, you know, at the limits in a little way of our industry's capacity right now. And, you know, if we can take advantage and drill through breakup when everybody else has to shut down, then we know we're going to get good quality services over that period. And then into the summer, too. Hopefully that persists where, you know, the winter drilling program is where it's most intense, and in the summer we can get better access to services and ultimately a better cost.
Mm-hmm. And right now, if we look at our capitalization, our available credit, production, and expected cash flow, how are we actually poised to execute all of the plans that we have, the expected capital program of $300 to $325 million in 2011?
You know, as my first quarter report showed, we're kind of on that $30 million a month burn rate with these 6 rigs that are running right now. So, you know, arguably if we even have 10 full months of activity, that's about $300 million. We've got a great balance sheet. We've got lots of debt capacity. You know, the extra production is going to drive cash flow up. The payback on these wells is quite fast, so we're actually capturing a lot of the capital that we're spending in the year back in that year. And that's helping a lot. You know, even from the wedge of production that we built this year, I think the $260 million, we were looking at well over $60 million of funds from operations being recovered from those wells within the first calendar part of the year. So, you know, that's allowing us, obviously, to reinvest faster and grow faster. The only caution, of course, would be the commodity price. You know, if we see a huge drop in gas prices or a big drop in oil prices too, not that we have those kind of pressures currently, but, you know, I think obviously that would make us want to step back a little bit and make sure that the returns that we want are what we're getting. And of course, the results. You know, if for whatever reason the drilling results weren't coming in the way we expected and the way we want, and we're not getting those returns, you know, that would give us pause, obviously, on the capital program too, but you know, as it stands today, I think we're very well set up to execute the 300 3¼ million program that we have laid out.
Okay. And you were talking about the gas prices and looking at where they've been over the last few years and where the futures market has them right now. There doesn't seem to be a lot we can count on there. How is our hedging program holding up, and what is it doing for us in terms of our business plans?
Yeah, well, that gas price isn't pretty, that's for sure. You know, we're still taking the future price off the table. There's still obviously, I think, a premium for supply a couple of years out, but, you know, we're trying to be a little opportunistic there too and catch a little momentum, pick away at that sort of $4 mark, but it's getting tougher. Futures contracts are kind of funny though. Like right now we have probably the most gas shorts out there that we've ever seen. And so really, when you're that heavily weighted on one side of the market, even just a small change is going to cause incredible volatility. And I think that when gas does move, it's going to be quite violent. But, you know, the hedges, we're still hedging, but they're really not factoring into our business a lot because there's no contango in the curve. You're hedging today for basically what 2 years out for what today's price is. So this, as much as you're securing today's price, perhaps protecting on the downside, you're obviously not getting anything on the up because the curve's pretty flat. So, you know, we're still hedging, but it's really not factoring in much in our business.
Okay. So, Darren, where do you see our focus in 2011 being? And are there any other comments you'd like to make about the outlook for our activities this year?
Well, our focus definitely hasn't changed. I mean, we're still going to drill, baby, drill. That's what we do. But, of course, obviously, we're going to make that growth profitable. Our focus is still going to be on costs. Our focus is still going to be on the returns that we can generate for our shareholders. And we're going to continue to focus and look for more opportunities. As Dave mentioned, you know, we've got a huge inventory, but we never stop looking. We're always looking for that future opportunity, and if we can be opportunistic on land sales and pick up some more land for a really good price, then we're going to do that this year. But we're not going to chase land. You know, if it's $6,000 an acre, we're not going to be at the sale for that one. We've just got too much good opportunity already to have to have it. And so, you know, we're in a great position, I think. The competition is heating up. You know, as Glenn alluded to, the last land sale was pretty heated. And we heard about Athabasca oil sands buying deep basin rights. I mean, you hear you've got oil sands players buying natural gas rights in the deep basin. So obviously it's a very good place to be because they're foregoing $100 oil to get into the deep basin. Well, you know, it's but that doesn't scare us. It never has. I mean, we've gone through periods of intense competition in the deep basin, and here we are today with one of the largest land bases, one of the most concentrated production bases, one of the most profitable businesses in the deep basin. And you know, we're not afraid when it gets competitive because we know where we make our money, and we stick to our guns, and we're going to make profitable returns for our shareholders. And at the same time, we're going to stay lean. You know, here we are. Well over 30,000 barrels a day with a few over 30 people. You know, we're over 1,000 barrels of production per day per person at Peyto. We're looking at over a $300 million capital program. You know, that's $10 million per person. Those are incredible numbers, incredible ratios. You won't see any other company in the industry that's that lean in terms of the number of people they're carrying to execute that kind of program and to manage this level of production. So we're going to stay lean and mean and very aggressive and opportunistic, and I think 2011 is going to, again, be a fantastic year for Peyto and its shareholders.
Okay. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to questions from investors and professionals working in the investment community or investment businesses. So, Joe, if you could open this up to questions from the callers.
The first question will be from Howard Ma at Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Just had a quick question. The question is, note that your current liabilities or your payables have doubled this quarter. Can you shed some light on that, please?
Well, included in current liabilities would be an accrual to pay out bonuses, which were higher in 2010 than they certainly were in 2009. And then it's just kind of the normal course. We had a much higher capital program. That capital program went right up to the end of December, when in the past we often had a week or 2 weeks where we really had to almost stop. So all of those costs would be in the payables. And as you recall, our Q4 2010 capital expenditure was $110 million, which was certainly the highest in the quarter and would explain a large amount of the payable at the end of the of December.
Great, thank you.
Thanks, Art. Okay.
From Kurt Molnar from Stifel Financial. Please go ahead, your line's open.
Good morning, Darren. This time of year always raises the inevitable question vis-a-vis the bonus structure of the firm, particularly when you've had a good year with execution. So could you just give some context to those that might be newer to the name as to how the bonus structure came to be and how you believe that it's the right kind of structure to maintain going forward?
Sure, Kurt. And this kind of dovetails into Howard's question about the accrued payables. You know, I think Peyto has a very unique bonus structure in that we're trying to tie and align the compensation for our employees with the goals of our shareholders. And obviously the goals of our shareholders are to get per unit growth in the asset base and some real returns generated for their capital. Otherwise we should be giving it back to them. And, you know, so we've designed, I think, compensation that is well aligned in that regard. Part of our compensation, obviously, is a market-based. It's tied to the performance of the shares or the unit price in the market, very similar to a stock option in that way. But because we pay it out in cash, it's more tax efficient for the company and for the shareholders. So it shows up as a cash expense item on our statements. But, you know, I think if you wanted to think about it, it's very similar to a stock option like many other companies have. Smaller, though, in terms of the total amount of shares that can be outstanding with that program, because we have another program that we tie to the value of the assets that we have, and that's our reserve-based program that is a dovetail with that market-based program. And the reserve one is, it's pretty rigorous. We're only looking at value creation from the producing standpoint, so we're not rewarding undeveloped opportunities that have been earned or that have been added to our portfolio in the year. They have to be producing opportunities, so you know this has to be cash flow generating asset that we're valuing. So we look at the proof producing reserves at the end of the year. We compare that to the proof producing reserves at the end of the last year. We look at them both with exactly the same commodity price forecast because obviously we don't affect gas prices here at Peyto. We're not quite that big yet that we're affecting gas prices. So we run them both cases on the exact same gas price. We neutralize for that and we look at the value that was created and then we adjust that for what we used to create that value, the shareholder capital, the debt that we used, and the equity that we used throughout the year, less the distributions or dividends that go out the door. So, you know, all in all, I think it is a very rigorous calculation that determines true value creation from the team and the efforts of the team over the year, and then we pay 4% of that value add. So, you know, I think the two programs are very much aligned to shareholders. Obviously, shareholder return comes in the form of the dividends that are paid out, and that's from the assets, the producing cash flow generating assets that we build, and from the share price and its appreciation over the year. That's where, you know, me as a shareholder, that's what I see in terms of my return, and so that's how the compensation schemes are set up at Peyto, and I think they're very much aligned to the shareholders.
Thanks for that. Just one other question while I have you. You obviously made mention of access to effective equipment and manpower in the field vis-a-vis presumably the drilling and the fracking side of the business particularly. Are there any other parts of the business going forward that you're looking forward to in terms of worried about cost inflation, availability of services, things of that nature that you spend time worrying about?
You know, we've got Todd here, our production manager. Maybe he can talk a little bit about field staff and those other kinds of services that we don't see directly from, say, drilling rigs and frac crews and stuff.
Yeah, Darren, I think one of the things that we see often is as the industry gets bigger, then our construction costs from those service companies start to go up, things like pipeline companies, welders, and that sort of thing. We start to see that. So we try and maintain relationships with companies that we keep them busy and they'll try and keep their costs in line. It can be difficult, especially if especially with welders, if they are sort of getting taken to go to other opportunities, we can see rates go up quite a bit. Trucking product is another thing. We can find shortages of trucks, and then they'll start increasing their rates. But again, we just try and align with service providers, and hope that they'll, if we keep them busy, then they'll keep their prices in check with us.
It's not, I don't think we're finding too much pressure there, comment Todd, but they're starting to build a little bit of pressure. And so, you know, our hope obviously is as we move into the summer months that some of that pressure comes off, because not everybody can operate through the summer months as typical in our basin. But we're going to see. I mean, there has been, obviously, Kurt, as you know, a big shift from gas to oil, even more conventional oil. Tritium oil is a big play that people are chasing right now, too. So, and the oil sands are heating up again at $100 oil. So, as Todd mentioned, the welders are starting to migrate north and eastward away from some of our key areas. But I think, you know, the softer gas prices are going to keep gas activity in the deep basin down, and I think we should be able to fare very well through the summer once being very active again, because we have, I guess, the access to our core areas year-round, basically. We're able to be, again, counter-cyclical with the timing of our activity to hopefully make sure that we can get the best of the services and they're available to us.
Thanks for your comments, guys.
Great, thanks.
Thank you, and there are no further questions at this time, Mr. G.
Well, great. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. I realize a lot of companies reporting this week, so it's been a very busy reporting and probably conference call a week for everybody. So for those that tuned in to Peyto's, thanks very much, and thanks to our shareholders. We had a banner year at Peyto. I think we're pretty proud of it, and we're very excited about being able to reproduce it in 2011. So we're already well into the year, and we're going great guns. So stay tuned, and we'll be back to you at the first quarter to let you know how our first quarter activity's been. Thanks very much.